clear as blue, but it's not enough. That's Churches. I'm Blake Murphy. This is Jays Talk Plus. The Jays played something close to their best game on Sunday. They win a very tense and fun and exciting series against the Seattle Mariners with tons of Jays fans on hand over those three games to take it in Seattle. It was a very nice change of pace, much better and more enjoyable baseball. Not enough to change the big picture, of course, but enjoy it for what it is. There is a lot of season left. The convos this month are going to remain largely the same, but fun is permitted. You're allowed to be glad that they hung on for a 5-4 victory on Saturday, and you're allowed to appreciate a really good Yariel Rodriguez performance. You are allowed to be happy that they were able to get a run across in extra innings and that the Mariners went 0-for-14 with runners in scoring position over the last four innings of that game. It feels almost impossible to do that, but they did. So the Jays win a series. No, it doesn't move the needle in the standings. Remain 8.5 games back of a playoff spot, but nice to stick it to the Mariners a little bit. Nice to give those traveling Blue Jays fans a fun weekend and nice to see some good baseball. Jays are off today before starting three in San Francisco tomorrow. Let's break down the weekend that was with Chris LaRue, play-by-play, or color analyst, rather, on the Blue Jays radio broadcast. Chris, obviously the highlight item from the weekend here, though, was not any of those three Blue Jays games. It was WWE's Money in the Bank event on Saturday. You've had some time to sit with it. How you feeling?
Oh, man. I have to first say thank you as my wrestling hookup for those tickets. It was a great experience. I've gone to wrestling events my whole life, and Money in the Bank was actually really, really cool. Seeing John Cena and seeing that last match was something that that I'll never forget. And being with you as an incredible wrestling enthusiast was pretty cool too.
Well, I'm glad you had a good time, man. Thanks for coming with me. A lot of our Sportsnet pals down there as well for that one. Man, so we will talk baseball. I know you're a big wrestling guy, though, and you said you've gone to a bunch of these events in the past and stuff. Like, is Cena, like, your guy? Like, you're about my age, so, you know, obviously I can have an appreciation for, like, Bret Hart and Stone Cold and The Rock and stuff like that, and that's when we were younger. But Cena lasted, like, 20 years at the top here. Who are the top of the mountain for you as a wrestling fan?
My top of the mountain, like I was big into it when I was in high school. So that's like 99 through probably like 2005-ish. I was big with Stone Cold, with The Rock, Hulk Hogan, like those guys. Like I told you the story about how Mick Foley threw out the first pitch when I was playing in Rochester, and he kind of hobbled out there throughout the first pitch. I talked to him for a good like 10 or 15 minutes that day. That was huge for me. So I think it's more like I'm more old school than new school. I know John Cena is not technically new school, but like I'm more generic in the people that I have always followed. Like I love watching the biographies of the guys that kind of open things up for everybody else, like the Steve Austins and The Rocks and those guys. And it's just honestly, every single one of those guys has an incredible story. That's why I love watching it.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, and that Mick Foley story is very cool. Right down to the like slow walk back to the dugout because he's spent 30 years getting his butt kicked. All right, Chris, last wrestling one before we move on to baseball. What was your favorite match from that night?
What was my favorite match? I think it was just the last match with Kevin Owens and those guys. Those guys are very new school in their approach and how they do things. They're all over social media. They're making a ton of money doing that stuff. So it's out of my wheelhouse, but I do appreciate the new school approach. And those are guys that I love watching right now. I mean, would I have rather Steve Austin versus Hulk Hogan or Steve Austin versus Undertaker? Sure. Of course. But I'll gladly watch those guys at the end of any event.
Yeah, great show. Thank you for coming with me. Thanks to WWE and Irene here at Sportsnet for hooking those tickets up for us. So, Chris, you were a little late because you had to book it from the studio because the Blue Jays were also playing this weekend. They took 2 of 3 in Seattle. I know you've seen it before, but it's never less cool to see it again and again. When you see the Blue Jays fans traveling like that on the road, you know, I know you didn't experience that as a Blue Jay, but what is, as a former player, you see a fan base that travels like that. What does that mean to you? How cool is that?
Well, it's definitely not cool as a former player, that's for sure. As a non-former Blue Jay, it's probably not very cool. I never got to play for the Mariners, so I wouldn't know how it feels basically playing an away game in your home stadium. I can't imagine. I mean, I know that analysts and fans and all that, they think that it's cool and something that is, I don't know, interesting to be a part of. But I feel like it would be very irritating for the opposing for the home team, right? For the Seattle Mariners. I remember, I don't know how long ago it was, but Ken Jennings, who is now the host of Jeopardy, I think he's from Seattle, and he posted a tweet about Canadian fans coming over the border and taking over Seattle during that weekend. And as a Canadian, I didn't like the tweet. I didn't enjoy the fact that he was, you know, talking junk about Canadians supporting their team. I didn't appreciate that, but I understand how he feels, right? I understand the irritation of the majority of the fans for that whole weekend being supporters of the opposing team, which makes zero sense. I don't know how that happens. And so as a former player, as a person who never experienced the Blue Jays side of it, I would probably say it's irritating. I don't think it's very cool. But as a Blue Jays analyst now, to see the sea of blue and the Let's Go Blue Jays chants and all that, I mean, it's so cool. It's got to be really, really fun for those guys. It's got to be fun for the analysts that are there. It's got to be fun, especially for all the young players that are on this Blue Jays roster. I mean, like Spencer Horowitz and David Schneider and those guys that have never really experienced something like that before. I mean, come on. Like, to have fans in Vancouver all the way across the country, that's got to be so cool, got to be so strange. But in the end, I mean, it's baseball, right? So you just got to love it.
Yeah, and look, as a fan, you know, I've done trips like that before I was in the industry, and they're always a lot of fun. And yeah, the irritation from the player side or the Mariners fan side. Last year, the Mariners they tried to sell Blue Jays merch that weekend, and the players like were borderline revolting. So yeah, it's got to be annoying for the players. So Chris, on the field, the Jays take 2 of 3. This is a Mariners team that they're still in first in the American League West. The Astros have caught up and closed most of that gap. It did not look like, at least offensively, a particularly good Mariners team. I mentioned it off the top, 0 for 14 with runners in scoring position over the 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th inning yesterday. How do you feel about this Mariners team overall as a potential playoff team or a team that could maybe blow this division lead here?
So I love the pitching side of the Seattle Mariners. I think they showed it this weekend with Luis Castillo, and even Emerson Hancock was pretty good on Saturday night. But George Kirby yesterday, I think George Kirby has some of the best stuff in baseball. He knows exactly what he's doing at all times. He throws 97, 98 with good sync. We saw it yesterday. So on the pitching side, I think the Seattle Mariners are a playoff team, right? I think they could go all the way to the World Series. But then you look at the offensive side. I mean, they were, like you said, just runners in scoring position, striking out. I mean, I think they're leading the league in strikeouts, and it's just not as impressive as it should be if you're a team that's leading a division. But I mean, the pitching side, we saw it last year with the Blue Jays. The pitching can kind of keep you afloat for a while, but the Houston Astros, as we saw a couple weeks ago or a week ago, that's the team that I think is going to surprise people. They're going to kind of sneak up on the Seattle Mariners, win that division, and then in my opinion, they're a team that could potentially win the World Series again. I know that the Dodgers are good right now. I know that the Guardians are good. The Phillies are very good right now, but I think truly, truly, when you look at rosters, I think the Houston Astros are ready to win another World Series. I know that most people don't want to hear that. They don't enjoy hearing that, but I think the Houston Astros, in my opinion, are ready to win another World Series.
I mean, we saw what they did to the Blue Jays, taking 3 of 4, and that's without Kyle Tucker, who was arguably their best player before he went down. So they'll get him back at some point. They're a team that's always aggressive at the trade deadline. So I'm with you as far as the AL West goes. This Mariners team, you know, like you said, the pitching is tremendous. But yeah, and that's that. They not only lead the league in strikeouts, they lead the league in strikeouts like by far. It's not even particularly close. It's like them and then teams like Oakland and Colorado. So not great there. On the Jays side, Chris, obviously, you know, no one's going to celebrate winning 2 of 3. This team's still 8.5 back of the wild card. I know you've been on teams that span from pretty bad to, you know, playoff hopeful in the mix there. When things have not gone well at the team level and you win a series like that, like, what is that vibe like? Like, obviously everyone prefers to win than lose, but I'd have to imagine this time of year, everyone's kind of just thinking about the trade deadline and what the next couple weeks look like. Is that probably a fair read?
You know what? I don't know how this Blue Jays clubhouse feels, just because I from day to day, I feel like my opinion changes. Are they going to stick with this roster? Are they going to try to do something at the deadline to maybe increase their chances to make the playoffs this year? The only thing that I don't understand about this roster is you look at the pieces that a lot of people are talking about getting rid of. We don't like this guy, get rid of this guy. You're not going to get anything back for anybody really, unless it's a Vlad or unless it's a Bo. And I don't see the Blue Jays trading either one of those guys, specifically Bo, because if you trade Bo right now, you're not going to get back anything close to what you expect, right? Maybe Vlad, but I don't think Ross is going to get rid of Vlad. Vlad is just, he's the face of this franchise. They're going to try to sign him long term, and he's an incredible guy to have in that clubhouse. But I just, at this moment in time, Bo Bichette, who I think is an incredible player, he's not obviously performing well right now, but if he gets out of this funk that he's in, he starts seeing the ball better, has a better approach at the plate, I think Bo can turn into the Bo that he's been over the last 3 or 4 years. And if you try to trade him right now, if you try to unload him right now, and I don't know how you feel about this, you're probably much more knowledgeable about it than I am. I don't think you're going to get even remotely close to what he's worth, right? So why get rid of him? Why get rid of Vlad? And then get rid of a Kevin Kiermaier, get rid of a George Springer, get rid of guys that you're not really going to get back anything anyway, right? So maybe, in my opinion, maybe a Yusei Kikuchi, you'll get a top 20 prospect back. But in the big picture, I mean, who are you getting back for any of these guys, right?
I mean, that's
a serious question. That's in your opinion, are you getting back anything for any of these guys that people just want to unload? You're probably not getting anything back, right?
You'll get a tiny bit back. Like, I don't know. I think back to the deadline last year, and like the Jays traded Semra Barisa and Adam Klofenstein for Jordan Hicks, like who was a relief pitcher rental. That's not changing your franchise, but it's a couple guys at AAA at least that if you need to, you know, Klofenstein's in the Cardinals bullpen up and down right now. Like it's something, but you're right. Then nothing that is, you're not getting anything back that for 2025, you're like, holy cow, we're so much better positioned for 2025 and probably not even 2026.
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing that people forget about, myself included, is that the Blue Jays need to win next year as well, and they should be good next year if they prioritize signing guys that are not in their prime, but at least can help this roster out. And like you said, a lot of these guys you get rid of, and you're not going to get a top guy. You're not going to get a guy that's changing the roster next year or even in 2026. So what's the point of getting rid of any of these guys, right? I want to see this team good next year. I want to see this team good for years to come. So it's a frustrating time, not only as an analyst but as a fan, because you know that not much is coming. Right, you know that this is it. It's just a matter of pitching better, playing better, guys getting healthy. Jimmy Garcia coming back and pitching well, that'll really help this bullpen. Chad Green, is a guy that's pitching very well right now, Trevor Richards. And I've talked about the bridge guys quite a bit on the show and in interviews. The Blue Jays don't have a bridge guy right now. Taking that spot from the starting pitcher to the late inning reliever, there is zero bridge guy. You have Zach Pop, Nate Pearson. Up until Tim Mayza was DFA'd, you had Tim Mayza, maybe Brendan Little right now, who's kind of stepping up. But those guys are very important to the success to the success of a team. And for the majority of June, the Blue Jays just didn't have that bridge guy. Jimmy Garcia got hurt, Jordan Romano got hurt. So Trevor Richards and Chad Green had to move into that high leverage role at the back end of the bullpen, and those guys were bridge guys. And now who do you have? You have nobody, right? And if you look back at a lot of these ball games, the Blue Jays have lost a lot of those close games in the sixth, in the seventh, and even in the eighth. So when Jimmy Garcia comes back and you kind of push Trevor Richards back into that bridge role, you push Chad Green back into that eighth inning role, the Blue Jays are going to be a lot better off, right? And I think people forget that. It's kind of the snowball effect where one guy gets hurt and then another guy moves into his spot and then another guy moves into his spot and that guy just struggles in that spot, as we've seen Zach Pop. He's been forced into that sixth inning high leverage spot, seventh inning high leverage spot, and he just hasn't done well. So I think Jimmy Garcia coming back is really going to change how this team plays for sure.
Yeah, and look, the bullpen on the weekend, they gave us a scare on Saturday. They managed to hang on, but they did a good job Friday. They did a good job around some traffic yesterday. So, you know, maybe something to build on there for those guys. And I just want to say, Chris, you gave some great insight to Blair and Barker last week about, you know, Jordan Romano and the surgery he's headed for and what coming back and that process looks like for a pitcher. I won't make you re-answer it here, but anyone who didn't hear that, I should go check it out. So that's the bullpen side. On the starting pitching side, Chris, we saw Yariel Rodriguez on Saturday, a second consecutive, like, terrific outing. Like, no-hitter into the fifth, ends up, he only gives up one hit over six innings. We had gotten a look at him early in the season, obviously, and then his first two starts back from the injured list were both, like, one was an inning and a third, one was an inning and a rainout. But these last two, he's looked like a completely different guy. What do you like that you've seen from Yariel this last little bit?
Well, I think number one, he's healthy, right? Like, I think coming back off the IL, I believe maybe a couple weeks ago, his first start, he just didn't look right. And I'm not saying he didn't look healthy, because he was obviously healthy pitching and throwing the velocity. He didn't look right. He looked a little bit tentative, and that kind of coincides with my talk with Blair and Barker. When a guy's coming back from an injury, it's really difficult to kind of let it loose, right? And let it go and throw that fastball like you would normally throw it. So I think the last couple of starts, we're seeing the Yariel Rodriguez that is free and easy, letting it go, very confident. And let's not forget, he's a rookie, right? He's still, just because he signed that 5-year, $32 million contract, that doesn't take away from that rookie mentality that he has of the jersey on the back of that guy standing in the, or the name on the back of the jersey standing in the box. You know, Aaron Judge coming to the plate. Oh my gosh. Yonder Alonso. Yordan Alvarez standing in that box. Like, rookies look at those guys and they think, holy cow, I'm actually facing these guys. Right. So let's not forget that Yariel Rodriguez still has that mentality of not a deer in headlights, but still looking up to these guys and wondering, do I fit in? Am I good enough to be here? Yes, I have $32 million in my bank account, but I've also started four big league games and nobody knows who I am. Right. So let's not forget that. I think people are putting a lot of pressure on Yariel just because of that. And they're forgetting that he is a rookie. So he's going to have ups and downs. He's going to have his bad starts. He's going to have his good starts. But I think the most impressive thing for me after he came off the IL is not the fastball. It's not the off-speed stuff. It's that bulldog mentality that he has. It's that bulldog demeanor. You'll see him hopping off the mound, fist pumping, and it's a very subtle fist pump, and I know that you've seen it. We talked about it on the broadcast, but It's that very subtle fist pump. Every single pitch means something to him, and that's what I love about him. It's rare. It's actually rare to find a guy that has that bulldog mentality, and that's the thing that I love most about him. Obviously, he has the big fastball. He has that little cut at the end. He has the good off-speed stuff. And I think one of the best pitches that he's going to be using going forward is that split finger that he showed a couple of times yesterday. I mean, or in his last start, that's going to be the pitch that really takes him, I think, to the next level. A pitch that not many guys can really command. But I think that he's got the potential to have that very good split finger, that good fastball at the top of the zone. And he's a guy that, honestly, he's going to be cheap. We're going to look back in 3 years and be like, man, that guy was cheap. We did not overpay for that guy. 5 years, $32 million. That is a cheap, cheap guy. And I'm glad that the Blue Jays signed him.
Yeah, me too. He's been a lot of fun. And you mentioned the bulldog mentality there. Yeah, the intensity, the differing, the leg kicks and arm angles and stuff like that. He's a ton of fun to watch. Chris, the Blue Jays are off today. They're on the West Coast. I can picture a little bit what an off day during a homestand looks like. You know, the guys who have wives and kids and stuff like that. It's a family day. The other guys maybe getting a round of golf in or something like that. On a road trip, I would imagine it looks a little different. What was an off day on the road? What did that look like for Chris LaRue, the player?
Well, are we talking about young Chris LaRue or old Chris LaRue?
Yeah, dealer's choice here.
Well, young Chris LaRue was a little bit different than older Chris LaRue, I think. So last night after the game, I looked at Ben and I said, well, that flight's going to be pretty fun, isn't it? So the best part about being on the road, and it's not about being away from your family. Obviously, that's a silly thing to say. A lot of people have their families on the road. A lot of people are probably meeting their wives and girlfriends and kids and stuff in San Francisco for that off day. But I think the biggest thing and the most important thing about being on the road for an off day after 17 straight ball games without an off day, let's not forget that, is that you don't really have the responsibilities that you would have if you were in Toronto or at your home ballpark. So I think that it's a little bit more freeing in that respect. You're obviously in a fun city like San Francisco. San Francisco's great, but you get on the plane, you relax, and you know that you have no responsibilities going to San Francisco. You can get on the bus right after that plane lands. You get to the hotel. You're probably going to have some dinner with your teammates, because when you're at home, you don't really spend that much time with your teammates outside of the ballpark. You have your family, you have your kids, you have responsibilities, like I said. So that's probably my favorite part about being on the road, is you spend a ton more time with your friends, with your teammates. You have that good steak dinner. You get the older guy to pay for that, you know, $1,200 bill or $2,000 bill. I actually got stuck with the bill one time. We played credit card roulette, and the bill was $3,000. I forget who I was with, but I'm pretty sure that it was seven or eight guys. I know that Andrew McCutchen was in that group. I think AJ Burnett was in that group, and I was one of the younger guys, or the guys that was still making minimum. And they pulled my credit card, and one of the older guys just started laughing, and they threw my credit card to the side, and they gave the black card to the waitress. But those are the experiences that you have on the road, right? Like, you would never experience that at home, because guys have the responsibilities of their family, their kids, other things, and those are the memories that I'm going to have. Most of my good memories are memories from the road, not at home.
Man, trying to picture the look on your face right now when that credit card gets pulled out.
Well, you saw how nervous I was throwing my credit card down for a $33 bill on Saturday night, let alone a $3,000 bill.
Yeah, next big pay-per-view here in Toronto, we'll do credit card roulette with a $3,000. We'll get one of those boxes or something like that.
Yeah.
Chris, thanks so much for taking the time out this morning, man. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, man. Talk to you soon.
Chris LaRue on the radio call as a color analyst alongside Ben Schulman this past weekend. Believe it's alongside Eric Smith for this next series. Ben Schulman off for a week before we get into the All-Star break there. Much deserved break for him. Yeah, it'll be Danjo and Arden on the TV side for this next series. Brad and Madison for Blue Jay Central. And then Eric and Chris on the call. Shai Davidi will be down in San Francisco for us covering for .ca. Also at .ca right now, by the way, if you were looking for the Masai Ujiri, Scotty Barnes, Emmanuel Quickly, introductory press re-signing press conference, whatever we're going to phrase that as, it is streaming up at sportsnet.ca. If you are a Canadian basketball fan, I also have a piece up at sportsnet.ca. We found out yesterday at the conclusion of the Olympic qualifying tournaments who Canada will be in a group with on the men's side. We already knew on the women's side. Put a brief preview up on that. Couple small updates before we take a break here. Tim Mayza cleared waivers and is now a free agent. That happened on Friday. Justin Turner also returned from the paternity list. Obviously, the news there being it was Addison Barger sent down to the minors rather than Stuart Baroa. So they're going to get a different look there. Addison Barger, obviously, not the most successful two stints at the major league level this year. So he'll go back down, get to work on some stuff. We'll see him again before long, I'm sure. Bo Bichette had been scratched from a game. He's all good after that forearm contusion, although he did not have a particularly good weekend at the plate. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa joined the Sportsnet television broadcast yesterday, talked to Dan and Buck. That was really fun to hear a guy who thinks the game at a super high level. No update on a timeline for him, but continues to be week to week. At AAA Buffalo on Saturday, Jimmy Garcia pitched a clean inning, only needed 10 pitches. Unclear on what his next steps are. Obviously, timeline-wise, he could make one more rehab appearance and still technically come back before the All-Star break, maybe get one in there. Maybe they just play it safe and have him do two rehab appearances. Whatever. We'll see how that goes from there. Ricky Tiedemann is also, per Scott Mitchell from TSN, this hasn't been announced yet, but he says Ricky Tiedemann is going to join the AAA Buffalo Bisons from here. He had a rehab start, his fourth rehab start last Wednesday. He'll now be at AAA and be able to throw up to 80 pitches. So he's back at AAA. He's back on that. If the Jays have one injury, kind of radar as well. Also on that radar, James Kaprielian, who has a bunch of major league experience, not recently because of injuries, but the Jays signed him to a minor league deal. He is now up to AAA after having kind of rehabbed his way up. So that's a name to mildly watch for starting pitching depth as well. And then Joey Votto continues to play down at Dunedin. Had a solid weekend there. Nothing much to update there. I would imagine at some point we see him up with the Buffalo Bisons as well, which would be a good cut. If you could get a Ricky Tiedemann / Joey Votto / Addison Barger AAA Bisons game right now, can't recommend that environment enough. Let's take a break. Rest of the show, we've got Ryan Dempster joining us at 11. We're just doing all the Canadian pitchers today. Marnie Gellner is going to join us at 11:30 as well. You might know her more for her work on the Minnesota Lynx and Minnesota Timberwolves. She's going to call the Minnesota Twins Chicago White Sox series. She'll be the first woman to call a Twins game as the play-by-play voice. We'll talk to her and talk a little bit about the Minnesota Twins there. After this break, though, we're going to be joined by Ben Clemens of Fangraphs, our pal. He is we're about a week and a half away from his annual trade value series coming out of Fangraphs, which we always talk about and is always really, really insightful. So let's get a little preview of that, see where the market is on some of these Blue Jays heading into trade season. Ben Clemens joins us next as Jays Talk Plus continues on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet 360.
Dive deep into Toronto sports and the NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. I'm Blake Murphy. Jays win a series down in Seattle. Take 2-3 off the Mariners. A pair of 5-4 victories, including a 10-inning affair on Sunday that included a George Springer 3-run home run. George Springer just unbelievably hot since June 24th. Look, we could have projected that George Springer would eventually turn things around to some degree. The absolute degree to which he's done it has been pretty remarkable here. He has a weighted runs created plus, so that stat that takes everything into account and adjusts for league factors and things like that, of 282 since June 25th. So basically hitting at three times the level of an average hitter, three times the level of an average analyst is Ben Clemens of Fangraphs. He joins us now. Ben, thanks for doing this. Good morning. And man, what do you make of the George Springer turnaround here?
Good morning. Hey, it's nice of baseball to remind us that we're not that smart. You know, that anybody can be great or terrible at any time. And it's not always because of something meaningful. Sometimes things just, you know, sometimes you're hot and sometimes you're not. It's a great reminder. He's not done. Like, you can have bad times and good times still. And every time I think I'm smart and know what every player is going to do next, something like this proves me wrong. So, yeah.
It'll happen again. It's been fun to see. Yeah, 13. That's a 13-game stretch that I mentioned. 16 RBI, 17 hit in that stretch. He's walking a bunch as well. And, Ben, because the league offensive environment is so low and because this has been such a heater, and this isn't where the bar is for George Springer. Like, obviously, the Jays need him to be better than an average bat, but he is almost back to a league average batting line now.
Yeah, that's wild because he started off so badly.
He did. It's been a fun turnaround. The Jays not turning things around quite yet. Obviously, they win 2 of 3 here, but they're still 8.5 games out. The playoff odds at Fangraphs still have them down at below 3%. I know, Ben, right now, this time of year, a lot of your focus is on the trade value series. So last year, it came out July 17th to 21st. We'll bring you on that week of July 22nd to 26th to talk about it more and break it down. Where are you, like, process-wise right now? Like, I know you talk to a lot of league execs and people outside of, you know, your own analysis of the stat lines and things like that to create this annual series.
Yeah, right now we're at the email a bunch of my friends and contacts on teams and see who I can bother stage. So yeah, like, I do a lot of background work. I check with the Fangraphs staff. I build a bunch of, like, spreadsheets, but also I watch a lot of video of these guys. I try to start with an analytical baseline and adjust it. And then I basically bother as many of my friends as I can to give me feedback and tell me what's wrong. And we're right at that stage of, like, no cold emails or anything, but people who I've talked to once or twice, like, hey, do you have a few minutes next week to talk this over? Basically, things are in a state where if I showed it to you, you would not be shocked and dismayed by, like, how poorly put together it is, but it's not done yet. And also, like, because I started scraping data for it 2 weeks ago, we're getting like a month of data on people before it actually goes live, a month of players' talent levels changing and everything. So there's still plenty of movement to be done there. But basically, like, I want to have it not bad before I show it to anyone that isn't me. And so I've spent a bunch of time getting that worked out, you know, kind of. But it's not just like, hey, how many WAR will this player make and how much will they get paid and, you know, take the difference between those two. There's a bunch of factors that goes into it. But yeah, I think essentially I'm just trying to have it in a presentable state before I show other people.
Which makes sense. I'm curious, and this is, you don't have to reveal too much here if you don't want to. But, you know, I have. People ask me sometimes, right? Like, oh, on the basketball side, why do Woj and Shams get all the stories? Why do Passan and Rosenthal get all the stories or whatever? And part of it is, like, you're trading on information. Because they're talking to all 30 teams, they not only is there an inertia of, like, of course they get the scoops, but also, like, they have information from talking to all these different front offices. I'd imagine there's an element of that as you do this process, especially now that we're a few years into it. How much, when you're having these conversations, you send it to friends with teams and stuff like that, how much are they picking your brain, curious about what other front offices are saying and thinking?
Not that much, honestly. In other things, they are. For this, I'd say a little less, but, you know, people will ask for, like, free agent contract projections sometimes, just to get an early start on that, or to, like, test their model against our model, that kind of things. I'd say that, I mean, I'm not Woj or Shams or Jeff Passan.
No, I'm using it as the information it, trading aspect of it, you know?
Yeah, I think that a lot of teams would just like to have some contact with Fangraphs so that they kind of know the people there and can, they hear something that we're, like, they're interested in something that we're doing. They know who to call. I think that much more so than the cross team trading, because those guys also talk to each other, and, like, they might talk to each other through Passan or, like, through a more reporty guy. I think that teams are interested in kind of keeping the communication lines open with us, which I greatly appreciate, obviously. Like, a lot of this is people just doing it out of the kindness of their heart because they read Fangraphs.
It's fun.
Like, oh, yeah. I read that series. Yeah, exactly.
Cool. So not to give anything away, and I know the list isn't finalized or anything like that, but the two Blue Jays names that have popped up on that list, and again, for anyone who doesn't know, it's a top 50, so an average team will have one or two guys. It's not an insult if you don't have a lot of guys on there, but Bo and Vlad have been on there a lot over the last couple of years. Younger guys, control ability, good performance, etc. Last time we kind of broached this with you, since then, Vlad has really turned it on and looks like Vlad, but Bo Bichette, I'd imagine, has to be one of the most fascinating guys to try to place this year because only a year and a half left of control right now. He's been in the 20s each of the last couple of years, and he's having this down year that nobody seems to believe like is going to stick. Like there's so much track record that Bo's good. Has he been one of the tougher guys to place in the series this year?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the really difficult things, I think we've kind of talked around this at various points, is at some point, as players like team control declines, it switches from like, what am I expecting from you in the future to what are you giving me right now? And it's a spectrum, right? It's not like one day it's one and the next day it's all the other. But the more remaining team control you have, the more it's like, I care about what this guy's going to look like in 2 years. And I think that's been like a few times we've come into like mid-July and Bo Bichette's been awful. Or he's just been hitting terribly recently. And it's like, yeah, but he's going to turn it around. And he does. Like, that's just how his career works. He ends up with the same batting line every year with, like, really big hot and cold streaks. I think we're, like, getting to the point where if a team is acquiring him, a lot of it is going to be, how is he going to play in the next month? Like, that's just a meaningful amount of the time that's left. And the more that I've, like, just dug the numbers and kind of crunched this, the more I think I might rather have Vlad than Bo Bichette for what's left of their contracts. They both will be free agents at the same time. You know, you've got the stub of this year plus next year. And Vlad looks great right now. I've generally been lower on him than consensus. I feel like that's been kind of my view in recent years. But look, he can underperform his like expected statistics based on how hard he hits the ball. And if he's hitting the ball this hard, it's still going to work. Like you can be an underperformer of expected, but expected is just so good. Like if I'm trying, anyone who's trading for either of these guys is trying really hard to make the playoffs this year. That's like, you're just not otherwise. And likely most of the teams trading for these guys aren't dying for a shortstop. That's not completely true, but it's hard to imagine a team that's in like a right on the verge of the playoffs position and just has a complete hole at shortstop. There'll be one or two, but I think that you don't quite get the same, well, I could have this guy as my shortstop for the next 4 years, or the next 3 years juice that you used to when you're looking at more of a rental. It's not a true rental, obviously, because you have 2025 still, but I'm actually, as I've done this and looked at these names and weighed them against each other, who would you trade for each other? I would trade more for Vlad right now. And I was surprised by that. I think when we talked about this earlier this year, I wouldn't have told you that. But I guess I've just put my GM hat on more, as I guess is a way to say it. Let me hit you with a few names, and I'm curious what you think about them. Would you rather have either of those guys or Grayson Rodriguez, who will be on your team for another 5 years after this year?
Yeah, I think you'd go with the controllable starter. Like that, like 3.5 extra years is a, or four extra years is a huge deal. And like, he's been, I mean, I know there are some like underlying stuff that maybe he's not a 3.5 ERA guy, but that's a lot of control for a potential like number two, number three starter.
Yeah. That's kind of my view. Like if I had one of them on my team for the next 3 months, I'd take the hitters.
Yeah.
But the control is just too much. CJ Abrams. You know, good player, but not as good of a player as Bo Bichette, I don't think. But you get 4.5 years this year plus four more.
Yeah. And that's like, Abrams is going to have to come off shortstop, I'm pretty sure. But
yeah.
And like, he's also an interesting one because like, he's a better fantasy player than actual player, right? So like, he pops the stat lines. But again, I think like, and this is obviously team specific here, right? Like rest of the rest of the season, I think even though Abrams has had a better year so far, most teams would bet on Bo rest of the way. But those, all those years of control, like, he's only 23. I think you'd make that swap to get basically like, hey, what if we could turn this guy into a Bo Bichette and you have 5 years of 4 years of him instead of 1 year of him, you know?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because last year, or like just put another year where you could have Bichette at a market rate even. Like, let's say that you need to pay him $25 million to get that extra year. I think teams would take him easily.
Yeah.
Because he is just more proven and you're not getting enough.
But you're going to have to go 6-7 years at the end of that at least, right? Once he hits free agency.
Yeah.
So unless he has another year like this, which I don't think anyone really figures in. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's really interesting to me because I'm looking at this compared to last year and I feel like that, like the fact that they're this close to leaving is going to weigh heavily this year because there are, I mean, you look at the All-Star rosters, there are a lot of young players. The league's like, there are a lot of spots in the league that are being spoken for by guys that are going to be around for 3-4 more years after this year. Right now, there's just been a big influx of youth. I'm not exactly sure why that is. Some of it might have to do with like the strange crunching up of the draft and development around the 2020 pandemic year, where there's less development that got people into the majors in early 2021 because people had one less minor league year. But it feels like there's kind of been an influx of like young controllable guys all making their debuts in the last 2 years. And that's, I'd say that's the big thing that is like, honestly, I don't know if the series is going to be as relevant as normal because a lot of these guys are not getting traded. Like I asked you about CJ Abrams and Grayson Rodriguez, but like they're not getting traded. Who would trade for these guys and offer the prices that the Nats and Orioles want for them?
So like, not... and this was something I was going to ask you, like, and it's always a fascinating, I love the series and it's a fascinating thought experiment to go through all of these, this guy or that guy and stuff like that. And then not that many guys will get traded. Like Juan Soto got traded off of the trade value list. It's possible. Yeah. Like when you're doing the list this year, like the highest ranking guy that could conceivably get traded is going to be who? Like Garrett Crochet?
Yeah. Garrett Crochet. Okay. I think, could any of these guys conceivably get traded? No, it's Garrett Crochet.
Okay. Okay, so I want to pivot a little bit. So these are obviously, the trade value series is always going to factor in control and your contract value and things like that. Almost nobody, probably nobody who is on an expiring deal who is a rental. Maybe Juan Soto's still on there. I don't know. The value is just so much for the next 2 months. But none of the rental guys are going to make it. What do you make of the what the market looks like right now for the Jays' potential rental piece? And we'll do this more closer to the trade deadline with you. But like right now we're looking, the Jays are 8.5 out. They're probably going to be sellers. Kikuchi would probably rank pretty high on the starting pitching rental market. Jimmy Garcia, yes, once he gets back healthy. I have no idea what to make of a potential Danny Jansen market. But do you think the Jays, if they do decide to sell just their rental pieces, could make out okay? Or is this going to be a little underwhelming?
No, I think they'll do fairly well. I think that Kikuchi in particular is just going to be a valuable commodity. It's a classic, like, there just aren't enough pitchers. There are never enough pitchers. And I'm not sure, like, exactly what he's going to get back, but I think that he's put up a decent enough track record over a decent enough number of years that teams will feel comfortable that he's a playoff rotation starter. And that really is a lot of the game when it comes to, can you get, like, real prospects in return for this guy? You know, look at the difference between non-playoff rotation starters like Kyle Gibson getting moved around to the deadline in various years and playoff rotation starters. Jordan Montgomery is the guy that I think about for that last year, where he was like a rental, pretty good, and he burnished his reputation in the playoffs last year. But like, no one thought he was supposed to be your ace. He's a nice number two, number three guy. And that can fetch you kind of maybe not a straight top 100 prospect, like no questions on their resume at all, but like a good prospect who would rank probably top five in your system. I'm not exactly sure who that's going to be this year, and I'm not sure which teams most need starting pitching. It's going to depend a lot on, you know, like, I think what the Astros decide to do, like how aggressively they try to shore up their team, given that they started so slowly but are now back, like, right in the race.
Two games out.
Exactly. I think that is going to be pretty interesting because they have a lot of pitching, but a lot of it's been bad. Like I'm not sure I'd want to start Framber Valdez in the playoffs right now. And so like theoretically, they could be acquiring a lot of pitching. And that matters a lot. I think the Braves might. It's weird because I think that they think their playoff rotation will be pretty good. But there's a lot of teams that could want to shore up the amount of like pitching that they're comfortable giving the ball for 5 to 6 innings in October. And I think that how many of those teams are buying is going to have a lot to say about the market for Kikuchi. I'm with you on the Danny Jansen market. It's just so strange. Like, catchers just don't get what you'd expect at the trade deadline, particularly guys that have a less obvious track record. Like, Jansen just hasn't played enough to where, like, when he has a cold streak, you're like, oh, wait, is he bad?
He's not, to be clear. He's just in a cold streak.
Not. But his cold streak is so cold, and it's such a chunk of his playing time this year because he's, you know, he's Danny Jansen. He always misses some games. That I think that that's going to make it just really hard. It's the same thing we were talking about with Bo. Like, yes, you got to trade for the track record. The baseball executives are not looking at what's been going on in the last 2 weeks, unless it's injury. But at some point, like, you're acquiring him for 3 months, and you know that he will need to take a week or something to get his bat, right? Like, no one is hitting this badly and just, like, the next day they're like, oh, my mechanics are perfect, I'm good. It takes a second. I think that the combination of the fact that teams are always a little hesitant to pay top dollar for catchers and left to learn a new staff, and the recent cold spell will make teams just kick the tires and then say, like, yeah, maybe he should hit well for a week for you first. I'm not saying that's right, but I just think that that's how it tends to work with really short-term rentals, especially catcher, where you devalue the defense a little bit only because they have to learn the new staff. Like, a shortstop who's hitting cold but is a great defender, I feel like teams are a little bit more willing to consider. That said, he is, I think, going to be the best catcher moving by a mile, so that's going to really help. Like no one's going to be kind of negotiating the Jays down saying, oh, we could go, like, get this other guy instead. There's no other guy.
No, that's in their favor for sure. What are you? Okay, Yasmani Grandal, good luck. Right. Go for it.
Exactly.
Quickly, before I let you go here, staying on catchers, the Jays are going to see the Giants. I know you get to watch a lot of that team. They allow so many stolen bases, but Patrick Bailey is a good defensive catcher and good at the run game. Can you give me, like, the 90-second explanation of, like, are the Giants pitchers just all incredibly slow to the plate?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, their pitchers are a problem. Bailey's not – he's having a not perfect year. He's been a little inaccurate with throws at times. He's but he is just getting hung out to dry. And additionally, if you're a Giants opponent and Bailey gets a day off, you should get your running shoes on. Kurt Casale is getting stolen on like crazy. He's thrown a few runners out in the past few weeks, but the Giants pitchers are bad. They're slow to the plate. They do not throw over well. And between that and the fact that you can steal the backup catcher, like, you should just go. They've started running plays trying to stop guys. Like, this is a set play because they just cannot otherwise. And, like, I honestly don't keep a super sharp track on kind of the Blue Jays peripheral base stealers, but all those guys should be going at every opportunity in this series.
They don't do it a lot, so we'll see. They're near the bottom in stolen bases. In fact, the Giants are dead last. The Giants are the stolen base version of the Blue Jays, where the Blue Jays have been out-homered by 40. I would rather be out-stole than out-homered like the Jays are, but the Giants are the stolen base version of that. Ben, thanks so much for taking the time out, man. Best of luck with the rest of the series. We'll bring you back on when it drops. We'll break it all down.
Great. Glad to be back soon. Have a good day.
Ben Clemens of Fangraphs. Again, that series usually drops the third week of July, the week before the trade deadline. So keep an eye out for that either late next week or the week after. We'll bring Ben back on, that week of the 22nd to 26th, kind of tee up the deadline, go through that trade value series, talk a lot more trade stuff. I mentioned it. Yeah, the Giants give up a ton of stolen bases. Patrick Bailey is in the 98th percentile for caught stealing above average and 97th percentile for for pop time and 97th percentile for framing. He's like a remarkably strong defensive catcher, and teams still just run all over them because the Giants do not really emphasize that particularly well. We'll see if the Jays get anything small ballish going. It hasn't been their identity, but might be a way when you're facing Blake Snell, Logan Webb, and Jordan Hicks, it might be necessary. Let's take a break. Let's talk to Ryan Dempster, co-host of Intentional Talk and Canadian baseball legend. Next.
Big guests and bigger opinions on everything happening in Leafsland. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. I'm Blake Murphy. We got a couple of other pieces of news over the weekend in addition to the Jays winning 2 of 3 and the minor leagues and injury updates we ran you through a little earlier. That included the All-Star rosters. Vlad is alone as a Blue Jays representative, which you would probably expect. It's his fourth All-Star appearance. It is his third time starting the game. He's not going to do the home run derby. He is, on his way toward, you know, if he sticks around for a long time, he already has 4 appearances at age 25. He's going to be up there in Dave Steeb territory for times representing the Blue Jays. He'll be up there in Vlad Sr. territory for times representing the Guerrero family. Also of note on that All-Star list, two cool things that we'll ask Ryan Dempster about in a couple minutes here when we bring him on. Paul Skeens is an All-Star less than 1 calendar year after being drafted, which is a pretty phenomenal, pretty cool story. The other All-Star that stood out to me, and it's been a long, long road to get here, and it's Steve Delabar territory to have a non-closing relief pitcher make the game, or a non-regularly closing relief pitcher made the game. Jeff Hoffman is an All-Star for the Phillies. So for anyone who doesn't remember, he was a top pitching prospect in the Blue Jays system. He was the key piece in the Troy Tulowitzki trade. And then he spent 5 years with Colorado, bouncing around, you know, not sticking in the major leagues, never really performing particularly well. You can look back and say, well, look, Colorado has a terrible reputation for the analysis they do, the player development they do, the resources they give players and things like that. Some of it is also probably just it takes a player a long time to get there and to figure it out. So Hoffman spent those 5 years with Colorado, never really got there, looked like he was maybe on the fringes of Major League Baseball. Cincinnati gives him a chance. He's okay as a swing man. Then they decide to move into the bullpen. He's pretty solid. And then Philly picks him up. And last year he posts a 2.41 ERA. It's a really great story. This year he comes back even better. For the first time in his career, he's not walking anyone. The ground ball rate is just enough to keep the ball in the yard a little bit more. And as you'd expect from a guy who had top prospect level stuff, he strikes a ton of guys out. 32% strikeout rate, only walks 5% of batters. The result is that he has a 1.21 ERA so far. The underlying numbers are not, nobody has underlying numbers that say 1.21 ERA, but they're nearly as strong. And yeah, he's been a huge part of that Phillies bullpen. It's a really cool story. It's, especially at trade deadline time here where some prospects will come in or some prospects will go out, and the returns on those guys are not always immediate. Sometimes it takes guys a while, and certainly Colorado is not reaping the benefits of Jeff Hoffman having turned into a guy. But it's very, very cool, to me at least, to see Hoffman at age 31 finally figure it out, finally establish himself as a major leaguer and be a huge, huge part of that Phillies bullpen with Jose Alvarado and Matt Strom and Gregory Soto and Orion Kerkering, who also has some pretty fun strikeout numbers in a small sample there. When you take into account the starters and the relievers, it's probably the best pitching staff in baseball. And Hoffman's been a cool part of that. Nice to see him get that nod. We're going to take a little bit of a look at the text line. There are, I should have mentioned earlier that we will take your texts and we'll sprinkle them in throughout the show and throughout the week, as we always do. There was one from Frosty in Halifax. Since the Jays will be retooling, do you think they could trade for a struggling young player that is under a long-term contract? For example, a Julio Rodriguez or a Michael Harris. That's an interesting, with Julio, I'll just say no. I don't think you're going to get Julio. Any thought from the Braves any thought from the Mariners that they're winning now, they should be contending now, competing now, will assume a Julio Rodriguez turnaround. The same way when the Jays were only 2.5 out instead of 8.5 out, part of that turnaround would have hinged on Vlad being better and Bo being better. Seattle is not going to sell low on a guy like that. Also, anyway, so yeah, Michael Harris, it's probably a similar thing. The Braves don't lock him up to that long-term a deal without being long-term committed. In theory, though, like maybe, you know, you look a tier down from Julio or Michael Harris, try to buy an underperforming asset or something like that. That is probably a little bit more realistic. We'll see. Anyway, you can text us to 590-590. Again, we'll sprinkle them in throughout the show and throughout the week. Let's see what Ryan Dempster thinks of the state of the Blue Jays, but we'll talk a little Cubs first. He joins us now. He's the co-host of Intentional Talk. He's an analyst for Marquee. He is, of course, a Canadian baseball legend. Ryan, how are you, man? Thank you for doing this.
Yeah, good morning. How are we doing?
Good, man. So we were just kicking around some of the all-star nods here. I know you keep a close eye on those Cubs, and Shota Imanaga was someone you felt pretty strongly should be on the all-star team. He got the nod. You happy for Shota? What have you, you know, obviously he's had a couple rough starts in a row here, but this has been such a tremendously fun season for him.
Yeah, no doubt. I think he's exceeded, you know, expectations anyways from, you know, the outside, whether those are his own or not, but I think just the transition he's shown from coming from Japan and understanding his fastball plays very well in the zone. He attacks hitters. You know, you can really take out probably the one start where he got really roughed up. I think he gave up 10 runs, but other than that, he's thrown the ball really well. And, you know, the Cubs have struggled, and if it wasn't for him, it'd be a real big struggle. And the guy's an all-star. He was, you know, pitching like it all season long. He's back in that form again. So super happy for him. He deserves this. And really cool kind of storyline just to come over, join the Cubs, and then in his first season make an all-star team. So congratulations to him. Really, really awesome stuff.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And that kind of rise ball he throws is a fun one to try to figure out as well. Also cool around the Cubs, and I know you do some stuff with Marquee. Three of your colleagues, Beth, Taylor, and Elise, were part of the first all-women broadcast for that Cubs team the other day. How cool is that for you to see as a colleague and as someone who works with them?
Yeah, it's just tremendous. You know, they work really hard. You know, they've all been there for a little while together. And Beth, obviously, her resume is incredible. She's done lots of things from baseball to football and all kinds of stuff. And I'm a tremendous pro. I've had opportunities to call games with her, be in the booth with her, and she's just so good. And then Taylor and Elise have just, you know, grown and grown as the years have gone by with Marquee and with the Cubs, and from knowledge of the game and understanding how it all works is really, 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 really awesome, you know, to see them do that. So I was really happy for them. I watched the game yesterday, and my son Jack's in the back, and he's happy about it all too. So
yeah, it sounds like he's having a good time back there. This Cubs team in general, though, not having a great time overall. You know, I know they finished above 500 last year, but they, you know, they make the managerial change. They bring in some pieces like Imanaga, and once again, it's not going well here. Kind of year four of this for the Cubs. What do you make of where they're at, kind of big picture, and then, yeah, acknowledging that the deadline's a couple weeks ahead, and we didn't really think they'd be, you know, in a sell position here. This was supposed to be a winning season for them.
Yeah, it's hard, man. I pull for these guys so much, and I want them to do great for them, and you know, I think, you know, some of the major issues that maybe weren't necessarily solved in the offseason, right? Another middle of the bat order, not just bringing Cody Bellinger back, but adding that middle of the bat order where, you know, you add the firepower, the thump there that can change the game in one swing, you know? And yeah, hey, man, great pickup in the trade for Michael Busch for the Dodgers, and that's awesome. But he's still a young guy, and he's still learning his way in this league. So I think that's, you know, one thing that's, you know, they got to work their way through. And then bullpen help. And, you know, and then you have stuff like Justin Steele, first start of the year, and he goes down with an injury, and you lose your ace and a potential, you know, potential all-star every year. So, you know, that kind of stuff right there is really, really hard to kind of overcome. And then when you have a bullpen that you're hoping everybody hits just the way they did the year before, when be the same as, you know, your best year. I think in bullpens that's hard to do, and so the bullpen struggle, a lot of blown saves, a lot of late inning struggles, and then it just becomes like this snowball that runs downhill, and then And then what do you do to overcome that? You got to just continue to fight. You know, but the season's getting shorter and shorter, and then our team evaluates kind of where they're at, and you have to be really honest with your evaluation. Are we a contending team, or are we a team that's got to trade pieces away? You know, how many of those pieces are you keeping for next year? So it's been a big struggle for them. I'm sure they expected better, especially after the way April went. And they're in a rut, and their back's against the wall, and they got to climb out of it now.
Ryan, how difficult is that from a clubhouse perspective? Like these next couple weeks, if you're one of those teams where, like, I'd imagine if you're a buyer, you know, it's pretty exciting. You're going to get another guy or two to help you win. If you're an obvious seller, you know, if you're on Oakland or Colorado, you know what the situation is. But those kind of fringier teams like the Cubs, like the Blue Jays, how tough is that? Are guys looking over their shoulder? Are guys, you know, just a little uncomfortable the next couple of weeks?
No, I don't think so. I think, you know, inside that locker room, you don't really think about that. You as players, you're just trying to do your job. You should be. You should be showing up every day to just focus on that. If you're looking at all the outside noise and you're worrying about the wrong things and you're not doing what you can to get yourself and your team back in a position to win, so... You know, I think that all you can control as players is going out there and playing. Now, if you're a winning team, cool, man. It's exciting because you have an opportunity to go out there and get somebody, and that is exciting. But as far as being on a losing team and you got to go out there and focus on that, you don't even pay attention. Your job is to just do what you can, play hard. You're trying to get your team back in it. Like, nobody, like, sits there and as a player and says, "Wow, man, I might get traded to a contender." You went to war with these guys since day one of spring training. You want to get back in a position where you can all of a sudden climb out of it. Like, everybody, that's your mentality. And so I think, you know, that's kind of how guys look at it. And you're not looking over your shoulder to get traded. Nobody wants to get traded. You know, everybody talks about, oh, go to a contender. I went down that road as a player. Man, you have an opportunity to go to a contender. Cool. I got a family, not just my ones that I live at home with, but these guys in this locker room that we've kind of tried to do something here, and it's not just as simple as like upheaving your whole life and going somewhere else to win. You want to win where you're at. And so these teams that are in that position where they might be trading guys away, their backs are against the wall, and they have to go out there and fight to try and get themselves in a position that they don't get traded away.
And that's, you know, that describes the Blue Jays situation well, like with the Cubs. And we've seen, you know, this Jays team not play particularly good baseball, but there are a couple guys individually who have turned their seasons around and are, you know, in the case of George Springer, really hot lately. In the case of Vladimir Guerrero Jr., has, you know, he's that cold first month is well behind him now. On the Vlad front, what do you like from what you've seen from him? Obviously, the turnaround was like very contact oriented at first, and now we're starting to see some of that Vlad power a little bit more. What have you liked from Vlad lately?
Yeah, I think just, you know, his ability of driving the ball to center field. You know, to me, Vlad's never been a right center type of hitter, but when he's back up the middle and is hitting balls over the center field wall, that means the breaking balls that hang in the zone get hammered out to left field. The fastball that maybe a guy's got a little extra giddy up, that's the one that goes to right field, those kind of things. So I think, you know, he's in a position with his balance, the way his swing is, he just seems extremely controlled at the plate. Sometimes as players, you know, we go through moments in our career where we lose it for a little bit. Maybe we're sliding a little bit, where we get, you know, as a pitcher, I get too fast going to home plate and I get underneath the ball. And next thing you know, my breaking ball is spinning. And then, you know, you're trying to find it back. And as a hitter, they can do that too. You get a little out of whack, just something a little mechanically that you lose a little bit of your power. And then he's obviously found it, locked it in, and he's grooving, and it's just been fun to watch, because this guy to me is a perennial all-star. He's a guy that, you know, can go out there every year and be an all-star, and at years when he's really on and he's really successful and the guys in front of him are getting on base, so he's driving them in, he's an MVP type candidate. I mean, he's a bona fide hitter, and I think he's proven that again this year.
On the opposite end of that is Bo Bichette, who we kind of, everyone here has kind of assumed it will come around, right? Like, he's got multiple years of track record of being that kind of hitter, and it hasn't come around yet. Are you still kind of in that camp that Bo Bichette has shown enough as a hitter that he'll round out of this and he'll find his way out before long?
Yeah, I'm a big believer in the back of the baseball card. Like, I think that, you know, we all have moments. I had moments in my – listen, I wasn't an ace. I had years I was. I was a solid 2-3 starter. That's what I did. And you knew what you were going to get out of me. And so guys will have years that, you know, maybe are a little bit off from what we're used to seeing. But I think Bo, you know, you're talking about a guy who's – he's a 290 career hitter. You know, and the power's not quite there. Obviously, the OPS is way down this year, right? So there's some struggles there. And I just believe that tells me that the second half of the season is going to be better. Like, we can't sit here and, like, I'm just looking at it right now, and I'm looking at averages right down the line, right? Like, this guy is a 290 hitter with an 800 OPS. So if he's hitting 226 right now and he's at 600 OPS, there's two things happening. One, he's hitting the ball to somebody all the time. Two, he's injured. He's not totally healthy, and he's trying to battle through something. It's not like he just all of a sudden forgot how to hit. This dude knows how to hit. His pedigree is to hit. His dad was a major league hitter for a long time. He just had a first couple months that have been rough. And so that tends to lead that I think he's going to rake in the second half of the season. I guarantee there's teams out there looking to trade for him because they know how good of a hitter this guy, how good of a ball player this guy is. So for people to go, oh, Bo Bichette, man, this guy stinks. Really? Look at the baseball card. He doesn't stink. He just had a bad couple first months, whether that was bad luck or just something he's battling through. But I think if healthy, Bo Bichette's the guy you want in your lineup because he's going to come back to the norm. This is an anomaly of what's going on. This isn't the norm.
Yeah, like you said, the worst batting average of his career is 290. The worst OPS is 802. He didn't become a bad baseball player at age 26. Just a rough first half here. Ryan, outside of the Blue Jays, wanted to ask your take. Paul Skeens is going to be an all-star less than a year after he got drafted. Maybe I'm missing someone historically that's done something similar to this, but how fascinating is that to you? How special is that to you to see a guy figure it out that quickly at the major league level?
Yeah, it's awesome, man. Yeah, I think it's so cool. I love watching this dude pitch. I love his attitude. He's a great kid. You know, you listen to him talk and the way he does interviews, he's got a smile on his face. He's appreciative of everything. And you're not missing anything. There's nobody's been drafted number one overall and made an all-star team the next year. So, I mean, what he's been able to accomplish in short order is pretty impressive. His command of 100-mile-an-hour fastball is as good as it gets in the league. And I just hope, you know, like, I'm all for seniority, right? Like, I'm all for guys paying their dues. I really am. I think that's super important. I think we shouldn't lose sight of that. But this guy, I hope he pitches in the All-Star game. I hope he doesn't pitch on Sunday and then he's not able to pitch. I want to see this dude facing the big dudes on the center stage in Texas, because that's what as a fan is all about, man. Like, to see this guy with his stuff faced up against. I saw somebody the other day said, man, Paul Skeens should start the All-Star game. And at first I thought, man, that's crazy. Like, this kid can't start the All-Star game. Like, somebody else deserves it more, whether that's Chris Sale or, you know, whatever it is. And then I was like, no. I mean, if we're trying to draw eyes to the game and highlight the best young talent in the game, why not? Why not have that Pedro Martinez 1999 All-Star moment like we saw at Fenway Park? You know, like, have them face the big boys before they get out of the game. And I hope that happens. I hope if he's not starting it, I hope he's the second or third guy of the bullpen, because it's so cool. It's great for Pittsburgh. I'm glad they didn't toil him away in the minor leagues. He's ready. He's clearly, obviously, an all-star starter in the big leagues and an elite guy. So I just think it's so cool.
Yeah, it's a blast. And yeah, the Skeens Shohei was so good. Let's get Skeens Judge or Skeens Soto early in that game too. Ryan, you made two all-star games. I know you didn't get the pitch in the 2001, but 2008, you pitched. That was the one. So the last year of Yankee Stadium, that game goes to 15 innings. You struck out the side. Where does that all-star appearance for you rank among your career memories?
One of the coolest moments of my entire career. You know, obviously winning a World Series and I was on some great teams, but, you know, just how all that took place and, you know, to have my mom and dad, my brothers and my uncle, my best friend all in the stands and to see that happen from a moment that they told me I wasn't going to even be pitching in the game because I pitched on Sunday, to go out there and throw in the ninth inning and strike out the side was just, you know, incredible, man. I can't even believe it happened. And I didn't throw a single strike warming up. And the year before, true story, the year before, my dad spread some of my Aunt Doris's ashes on the center field warning track. She was a huge Yankees fan. And so when I walked out of the bullpen to go pitch after throwing about five strikes of the 60 warm-up pitches, I looked down at the outfield warning and I said, "Hanky Doris, I'm going to need you right now." And I went out there and struck out the side. And it was just still to this day, every time I think about it, I smile, I laugh. And what a special moment in my career that was.
Man, that's awesome. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. That sounds that's very, very cool. Ryan, I'll let you go back to dad duty here, man. Thank you so much for taking the time out.
Yeah, you bet. Jack says hi, too. He's a huge baseball fan. We watch the highlights every morning on our app. And I already got him out there hitting a baseball. So
that was going to be my next question. What does the swing look like? Are you putting the ball in his left hand? You know, those kind of things.
Right now he's ambidextrous because he's only two, but he's doing both. So it's a lot of fun. And he loves hitting a baseball, and he loves watching baseball. We took in a collegiate game in Bend, Oregon last night, watched a little collegiate summer ball. And yeah, baseball is a big part of this little kid's life for sure.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for taking the time out to both of you then.
Yeah, you bet. Great being with you.
Ryan Dempster, co-host of Intentional Talk, analyst for Marquee. And yeah, two-time All-Star 2000 down at Turner Field in Atlanta when that still existed. He didn't get into the game, but a 2008 appearance. That was the year that Yankee Stadium was closing. And the truly, I mean, I haven't gone through every box score of All-Star games in Major League history. There might be something I'm forgetting, but a 15-inning All-Star game where one side just makes error after error after error. It gets walked off in the bottom of the 15th. It's at Yankee Stadium right before it closes down. Man, what a fun one that was. It was I won't read through all the starters. That's bad radio, I guess. But it's a very fun game. Russell Martin was in that game. Ryan Dempster was in that game, of course. Roy Halladay was in that game. Justin Morneau, another Canadian presence in that one. That was, the AL lineup was Ichiro, Jeter, Josh Hamilton at the peak of Josh Hamilton, A-Rod Manny. That was the first five in the AL order. What a cool All-Star game that was. And then, yeah, it goes 15 innings. Scott Kazmir gets the win. Brad Lidge gives up the winning run there in the 15th. What a fun one. I can't imagine anyone would want the All-Star game to go to 15 innings this year, but hopefully it's one that's as fun and competitive as that 2008 one was. Vlad will be there, as far as we know, barring any changes. He will be alone. He'll probably play first base or DH too, even though he played third base yesterday for the first time in a month. That is always fun to see. We'll see if Vlad plays at third base. It was interesting strategically in that game, because the way the defense was lined up was Horwitz at first, Jimenez at second, and Vlad at third. And Leo Jimenez is a very good defensive player who you could, you know, probably bounce everywhere. But he has only played one inning of third base in the minors. He's primarily been a shortstop and played some second base. So when they're looking at that, they have to decide, you know, okay, if that's what you want as a lineup perspective, would you rather have Jimenez at second, and that means Vlad has to play third, or would you rather have Horwitz at second and you take the risk of Jimenez playing third, a position he's not all that familiar with, even though he's a very good defensive infielder, and they opted for Vlad at third. Wasn't really tested all that much other than that one play where he kind of came across in front of Bo Bichette there. But yeah, interesting to see that dusted off for the first time in a month. Wonder if we'll see it a little bit more moving forward. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will answer some of your texts in the text line to 590-590. We're also going to talk to Marnie Gellner of Bally Sports North. She will be calling this Twins-White Sox series. She will be the first woman on play-by-play for a Twins series. Also just a really fun basketball person to talk to as well. So we'll talk to Marnie. We'll answer your text to 590-590. So fire away in the text line as well. All that's next as Jays Talk Plus continues on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet 360.
Unrivaled insight, analysis, and opinions on all things Blue Jays. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. I'm Blake Murphy. Jay is not in action tonight, so I will be tuning in to the Minnesota Twins against the Chicago White Sox should be. I mean, the White Sox are not a particularly fun team to watch, I guess, if you're looking at potential sale pieces ahead of the trade deadline. But the Twins are fun, and this one should be especially fun because Marnie Gellner will be on the call. I know her and appreciate her from her work with the Lynx and the Timberwolves at Bally Sports North. She's going to call this Twins series, the first woman to ever be the play-by-play announcer for a Twins game. She joins us now. Marnie, good morning. How are you?
Hi, Blake. I'm good. Thank you for having me. How are you doing?
I'm good. So how are you feeling? I know you've done baseball stuff in the past. You've done spring training games and things like that, but this is a pretty cool night for you, I'd imagine.
Yeah, it is. I'm trying to not make a big deal of it because it's really not about me, but I mean, for me, it's about me. Hello. I grew up as a Twins fan. I'm from Minot, North Dakota, and we don't have a baseball team in North Dakota, and Twins was our team. So it's a big deal for me just because I've been a fan of this team for so long. I've been working with them since probably worked my first Twins game in 2005, maybe. So I've been around the team for 20 years and have called 3 spring training games, but never a regular season game. So on one hand, it's not all that different from things I've been doing over the last handful of years, well, 20 years. And on the other hand, it's a big step that I've never been able to take. So I'm excited for it. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be fun.
I'm very excited for you. Excited to check it out. This is maybe a little too like inside baseball, inside basketball. What changes for you from like moving that sport? Like, we have Dan Shulman here in Toronto, who obviously does a lot of college basketball stuff and then comes back over to baseball. We've had Matt Devlin on the Raptors go over to Blue Jays at times. What changes in the play-by-play role between those sports?
So I've been doing basketball play-by-play all summer for the Minnesota Lynx, featuring Canadian Olympian Bridget Carleton, of course. The prep is very different for baseball, just in that it's the sport has so much more time to breathe. And I've called NBA games before as well. WNBA is even tighter. When we come back from commercial break, they are inbounding the ball. And we a lot of times do not even have time to get a graphic in. So as a play-by-play announcer, to now be in a baseball game, which can get lengthy and always has room to tell a story, just the being over-prepared with long-form stuff, nuggets, stories, storylines, things like that. I'm preparing a lot the same way, but as a broadcaster, you make a board. I'm sure you've had many boards in your life, Blake. My basketball board is like this manila envelope with the printed sheet, and everybody is separated by number, and it's quick stats, and it's last 3 games, and it's just like boom, boom, quick little hits. And for this, I'm doing more like by alphabetical position players and a word document and like storylines, and then a second section of relief pitchers. And there are just a lot more players, and the information can be a lot longer. So it's more prep work, different prep work. It's actually kind of nice to have a different routine, because I've been prepping for so long for basketball that it's like, oh, this is kind of a different world. It's been fun.
Also, they hit you with by the way, the first game, it's a bullpen day. It's you better know all 9 relievers, because there's no I know you're getting Bailey Ober and Pablo Lopez later in the series, but there's no one guy that's slow play and slow build for 5-6 innings. You got everyone right out of the gate.
Yeah, or your starter gets a blister in the first inning, and you're like, God dang, all this stuff I have on him, hoping he's going 6th.
Okay, so with this Twins team right now, with where they are, obviously, in a wild card spot and competitive in the AL Central, what are some of those like high level storylines you're focused on? They're coming off, they just won a series against a very good Houston team. They've obviously won a handful of series in a row here. Is the feeling around the team kind of like, now's the time? Like this is rolling a little bit. Let's get back in that central mix.
It's really good. I could not have planned the vacation of Corey Provis, who is the regular like guy, any better. He picked a great time. The Twins have won 5 series in a row. They have the second best record in baseball over the last month. The Red Sox are 17-7. We're 18-8. Our all-star is Carlos Correa, and we expect that there will be replacement player or two. I mean, you don't have this kind of a first half of a season and not have more than one. Everything is positive. A walk-off win yesterday against the Houston Astros, part of a series win against the Houston Astros. I mean, it was a happy flight here, which is always a great thing. And when you work for any team at any time, if the vibes are positive, if the team is rolling, everything is better. Every story is easier to tell. Every storyline comes up much more organically. It's a real joy to be able to work for a team that's winning. So, like, Twins fans right now are loving it. This team is in a really good place.
Last time we saw them here was the height of, like, the sausage. And it was like, oh, is the sausage going to be able to cross the border and things like that? I say that just to bring up that I'd imagine, as far as our jobs go, Rocco Baldelli's also got to be pretty high on the list of guys who make our jobs easier, right?
Rocco's awesome. Yeah, Rocco's been great to work with. The sausage has been put away.
I hope it's been replaced, right?
I mean, that thing lived a life, a really good life. R.I.P. the sausage. We're onto a Prince fedora now, like a fedora cap, a purple one for home runs and celebrations. But as with anything, like especially baseball, so superstitious. And now that the team is doing well and the sausage has been gone, the sausage is going to stay gone. If and when this team hits a slump, you might see a reappearance of some sort, I'm guessing. But for now, I would hope it's not in Chicago.
Yeah, that's you can do without the sausage part in Chicago. This is a really bad White Sox team that the Twins are running into here. I know from the team perspective, like, you can never overlook an opponent, maybe only take two or three or whatever. These two teams have orbited each other a lot over the years. What do you make of just, like, again, any team can win on any day, whatever, but, like, for example, the Jays' only good stretch of play this season was when they played the White Sox 7 times in, like, 10 games. It's pretty remarkable.
It's so sad that multiple teams can say that. Our best stretch of baseball was when we played the White Sox. I mean, it's, you don't want to pile on, but they are truly and honestly on pace to be the worst team in the history of baseball by winning percentage. They are biblically bad. They just lost to the Florida Marlins. They lost the series 2 of 3 and yesterday afternoon in a walk-off where they were up 4-3 in the ninth. The White Sox were up 4-3 in the ninth with 2 outs. And then they gave up a game tying shot off the wall. And then they gave up the game winning home run to their former prospect that they traded away. I mean, it's just like, if you are a White Sox fan, you are being hounded mercilessly. The Twins have absolutely dominated this series, as most teams have. So I guess you kind of watch out for that mentality of thinking you just stroll into the ballpark and you just crush them. So you kind of have to maybe force yourself to mentally sharpen up a little bit. But boy, it's a really lethargic product to watch. Thankfully, I'll have a Canadian in the booth with me tonight, Justin Morneau as the analyst, and Denard Spann. We have a 3-person booth tonight. So if I can, I'll probably just turn to Justin. If it's like 9-0 Twins, I'll be like, Morneau, your thoughts?
Yeah,
and he'll take next 2 minutes.
Here's one. I was just talking to Ryan Dempster on the show, and we were kicking around the 2008 All-Star game, which was the last one at Yankee Stadium the year that it closed. And that All-Star game went to 15 innings and ended on a walk-off. And Justin Morneau played in that game. So if you need some filler, you could ask him about that one. I don't know. Marnie, I did want to ask you about some basketball stuff because I don't get to talk to you very often. So you do call all the Lynx games, and it's a pretty good Lynx team. They're not as good as my Liberty just yet, but Bridget Carlton, we're obviously rooting for her. What have you made of her season in general and where the Lynx are here as we're not at the break yet, but we're getting real close to this Olympic break here.
First of all, let me check my notes, Blake. Lynx have beaten the Liberty 2 of 3.
Yeah.
Oh, that is great. So that's a great matchup, actually. Those two teams, that could be a finals preview. That would be a great series. Bridget Carlton, having an absolute breakout season, and the one that the Lynx have been hoping she would have for the last few years. Cheryl Reeve will tell us every year when someone asks about Bridget Carlton, Cheryl being the head coach of the Lynx and the U.S. Olympic coach, we want BC to hunt three-pointers. We want BC to take her shot. There are no bad shots for BC. She's been pushing Bridget Carlton to find the gear that Bridget has when she plays with Team Canada, whether it's the Olympics or just U.S. national exhibition games, whatever. Bridget is more of a go-to player, a leader statistically, and she kind of never has been that in the WNBA and never really been that with the Lynx. Now she's been starting almost the entire season because Diamond Miller, who is a second-year player for the Lynx, had a knee issue, got it cleaned up, but missed a month. And BC took her place in the starting lineup, and she is not giving it up. She has been fantastic. She's been a huge reason why the Lynx are the number three team right now in the WNBA. Chatham, Ontario, Canada, thank you for Bridget Carlton and the season she is having.
Well, and here's hoping that, you know, that extra, you know, role and confidence and things like that she's playing with carries over to Canada, because Canada's really going to need her at the Olympic level. Are you getting to do any Olympic stuff? Sorry to ask this without having been able to prep. No, you're not either. Okay.
No, it's I would assume, is it NBC and all of its?
I don't know what it is in the United States. Here it's CBC. Like Dan Shulman will come off our Jays broadcast to do Canada basketball. Megan McPeak, who does Mystics, is going to be doing our basketball as well. And another person named Nabil Kareem. But yeah, it won't be me. But I'm very excited, obviously, as a fan. How excited are you for the Olympic cycle?
I am excited. And it's been a very prominent topic for us in Minnesota because our coach, Cheryl Reeve, is the coach of Team USA. And the hot topic, of course, was Caitlin Clark not being on the team. So we had to flush that out for a full week for sure. But that collection of talent is shocking. When you see the Asia Wilson strolling with Brianna Stewart, and hopefully Nafisa Collier can play. She's irritated her plantar fasciitis. But man, just that global stage. And because the last Olympics just didn't look like Olympics, I feel like it's been a long time since we've been able to have all the pomp and circumstance and watch it with fans around and give it kind of its proper glory. So I'm paying extra attention because of the Minnesota and Lynx connections to women's basketball. I've always been a gymnastics fan. That has always been my first and foremost love. I was in gymnastics as a kid. Don't know if you've heard of me, Marnie Lou Retton. That's what I wanted my kids and my friends in grade school to call me, but it didn't catch on. I just love the Olympics, period. And I love that they're back sort of in their full force with all the glory this year.
That's, it should be a lot of fun rooting for Canada, obviously, but a Canada-US final or semifinal matchup would be fine. We don't have to be pitted against each other just yet. Marnie, last one for you before I let you go. I saw that you got to be on stage a little bit and do a lot of stuff around Winstock, Minnesota, the big country music festival.
Yeah.
How much fun was that? And are you a big country music person normally, or was that just like, hey, Winstock's here, let's do it?
Yes. No, I am a huge country music fan. I grew up in North Dakota on country music. I actually like all kinds of music, but country is probably the most in my soul and in my bones. And Sarah Evans has been my favorite singer for a long time. She was at Winstock, and Tiger Lily Gold is from North Dakota. They're in Nashville now, but two girls that I've gotten to know and I'm supporting, and they were at Winstock. So the connection was there. One of my all-time favorite country artists is Terry Clark. And I know she's one of yours, but she's got some bangers.
Nice.
She's always fishing on Lake Erie too. I follow her on Instagram. I just saw her this morning. She had a post with, she's got like 9 fish. She's a very, very good representation of Canada. Is that weird that I'm just trying to bring in Canada to
No, it's great. I feel like Minnesota, North Dakota, Canada, like there's enough. Like I don't think you can hear it because you're on Zoom, not on the phone line. But I played you in with Tiger Lily Gold. Like I'm ready I'm ready to share here. Right? We can do it. We can do it both ways.
What song was it?
Which one? Shoot Tequila. Just because that opening riff. Because I only get like, it's even a shorter window than like walk up music. I only get like 3 or 4 seconds. So yeah.
Props, man. Respect.
All right. Okay. I'll let you go. I know you got a lot of prep to do. You got to get down to the ballpark a little later. Marnie, really looking forward to hearing you on the call tonight. Congrats and best of luck with it.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Blake. It was nice to talk to you. Hoping the Raptors have a good season for you this winter. Hoping your Blue Jays can, you know, next year, I think is your year.
I'll settle for one of the two. If one of the two can turn it around. Okay. Marnie Gellner, thank you so much.
See you, Blake.
Marnie Gellner of Bally Sports North. Again, Wolves, Lynx, and for this series, the Minnesota Twins will be on the call with Justin Morneau and Denard Span, and the Jays aren't playing. So, you know, what else are you going to do with your Monday night? Actually, like a bit of a weird blank night. There's not a ton of baseball action. The Olympic qualifiers just ended. The California Classic is going on, the like other summer league, but Las Vegas Summer League hasn't started up yet. I don't think there are any notable like tune-up games or anything like that tonight. It's all Monday Night Raw on Sportsnet 360. That's it. We got about 8 minutes left here. We're going to take some texts in the text line. Fire away to 590-590. I did a podcast and a YouTube stream with Samson Folk of Raptors Republic yesterday, and all the questions were like wrestling/basketball related. Like, hey, which players would make the best tag team, et cetera. Please don't hit me with those in the text line. Hit me with baseball questions to round this show out to 590-590. Jake from Port Perry asks, thoughts on trying to acquire Jordan Walker, perfect change of scenery guys the Jays need, like when they acquired Teoscar Hernandez from Houston. So that's first of all, this is I was watching anyway, my head went to Christian Walker instead of Jordan Walker initially. I'm like, wait a second, he's a free agent, just sign him later. But no, obviously, and Christian Walker is a first baseman, so you get into the Vlad who plays where, DH spot thing. Jordan Walker, so for anyone who doesn't know, obviously, or doesn't remember, a first-round pick of the St. Louis Cardinals, still just 22, and is down in AAA. He is not hitting well even at AAA. So something's gone awry here. We're like, obviously, they pushed him really aggressively. It was a surprise when he made the opening day roster last year a little bit. He wasn't awesome last year, but he still hit 16 home runs and you know, had a good number of doubles, struck out not a ton for that power profile, and then this year he just has not been able to get it together. Like, he hit 155 at the major league level. He's hitting 244 down in AAA. He's only homered four times in 53 games at AAA. So I'd have to dig in a little bit here to see if there's, you know, an underlying injury, what's going on with some of the batted ball stuff. I'd be surprised if the Cardinals were willing to give up on a guy like that so early. Like, again, he just turned 22. So you've got, not only is that really young, but you've got a long runway of control here. More to your point though, Jake, I think, yes, those are the type of opportunistic trades you're trying to make in a short-term sell. If you're selling with the idea of competing again really, really quickly, you want to try to find a guy who is maybe blocked to the majors or stuck in a fourth outfield role, but could be an everyday guy like Teoscar. Yeah, one of these guys who, you know, I don't know that Jordan Walker's fallen out of favor with the Cardinals. He's just not playing well. But if it's something like that, you know, the Cardinals always seem to have just an extra outfielder around that you could, whether it's Lars Nootbaar and Dylan Carlson the other year, whatever. There's always an extra one kicking around for Jays fans to try to go after. But I do think, to your larger point, that type of opportunistic, get the guy before he takes the step to being the kind of guy you think he can be, is an important part of this, because you're not going to, a good team that is trying to add right now and buy right now is not going to trade you helpful things off its major league roster because they're trying to win right now. Or if they do, it'll be a lower level one. And you probably don't have the pieces to get, you know, the Juan Soto package, the huge prospect package, even for a guy like Kikuchi, who's a rental, you know, you're probably not getting that massive prospect haul. So finding that guy, you know, Will Warren is a name that's come up on the, for potential guys the Yankees could sell. Now, he has bad numbers at AAA, but there's some stuff under the hood that suggests, you know, you change the pitch mix, you'll get him to drop a pitch or help him against lefties or something like that. You know, maybe he ends up like a good reliever or something like that, but that's a guy. He's blocked to the major league level. He's flamed out, or he's kind of plateaued at AAA a little bit. So those are the type of moves, and I'm not advocating for Will Warren necessarily. I'm just using that as an example. So yeah, Jake, good question. And I think, you know, a part of what the strategy should be. Frank at Scarborough asks, what do I make of Gausman's kind of up and down season? He's been dominant at points, doesn't feel as consistent. Yeah, I think honestly, it's probably just like he's lost a little bit of a step with the fastball and the splitter, and velocity isn't everything. And what we know about splitter pitchers from the past is that you should actually be a little insulated from a velocity drop as a splitter guy, because what's most important with those two pitches is that the difference between them stays consistent. Having said that, Gausman's talked about not feeling like his splitter doesn't have as much depth to it, so it's not getting that same kind of bite down in the zone. That's part of this. And then, look, I think in retrospect, it's a little telling that early in the season, before any of the struggles happened, he was trying to add another pitch. He was trying to work in that two-seamer, that sinker that goes into righties, gives him another option there. I think that's notable. I think it's smart for him to have gotten ahead of it. The way things look right now is that Kevin Gausman has gone from an ace level guy to, you know, a mid rotation guy. And that's fine. Those things happen in your mid 30s. He can probably get some of that back, you know, feels a little better. It's worth remembering that he got a late start to the season and things like that. So maybe he starts feeling better a little later, comes out of the All-Star break. The splitter's got a little more depth. But also it's possible he is just a mid rotation guy at this point, which is, not what the Jays need, given how much they need their starting rotation to carry them. But it's a possibility there. Nick from Toronto said, on Chad Green's option worth $10.5 million for next year, the general consensus is the Jays will try to run things back. But what do you think about the possibility of shopping him? Yeah, I think, first of all, I don't even think it's an option. I think they had to pick it up last year. So I think Chad Green's locked in for $10.5 million next year. I think he is probably the guy with multiple years left on his deal that I think is most likely to move. And part of that is even a good version of Chad Green, you know, it's tough for relievers to be worth $10 to $11 million, especially ones into their 30s. Now, look, he's pitched well enough this year. The velocity's come back up a little bit, an extra year removed from Tommy John. I think he'd have a market. He's a guy who's done it in big markets. He's done it in big moments of playoffs and stuff like that. I don't think it would be the worst thing to come back next year and have Chad Green as a seventh, eighth inning guy on that salary. Like it's not, you know, dollar per win or whatever. You're not going to get $10.5 million out of it probably. But he's a really valuable arm to have. But I also think they're going to be contending teams, especially the ones with deeper pockets who would have some interest in Chad Green. And yeah, you should explore that for sure. Ted in Toronto asks, what is Nate Pearson's ideal pitching role? It's a tough one, man. Like, we kicked around with Ben Nicholson Smith last week, and him and Arden Zwelling had talked about it on At the Letters. You know, this idea that the organization has at least thought about stretching him back out, and that was more Ben and Arden kicking the idea around, but it is something the organization has thought about. He hasn't established himself as that elite a reliever to where I think it would maybe be worth at least trying. But I do think that a guy that big, a guy that has multiple pitches, he's even trying to work the two-seamer back in now, a guy who did come up as a starter, I would at least try to see if you can get a multi-inning role out of him. Now, whether that ends up being, you know, Trevor Richards is obviously the absolute best outcome for a multi-inning guy who can also jump into leverage sometimes or be an extended opener, et cetera. I would maybe try to stretch him out like that. You know, maybe it ends up more Jared Koenig, who kind of opens and does long relief work. There are a few guys out there like John Brebbia is doing it and the White Sox are bad, but you know, him in that kind of flexi role is at least interesting. It's probably something like that to after multiple years of relieving to get him back to being a starter and to project that he would be good as a starter is a little tough, but maybe you can lengthen him as a multi-inning guy for next year. Someone who didn't side theirs asked if George Springer's value has gone up. I mean, it has gone up. He's playing very, very well. He's shown now that he has figured out how to get back to getting to velocity. The defense and base running were always there. It's great. The reality, though, is even a good version of George Springer probably wasn't going to have a huge trade market because he's owed $48 million beyond this year, and those aging questions are only going to be there still. I think if you are a Blue Jays fan, you take George Springer being better it's a huge win. It's been a ton of fun. This is an awesome turnaround. I think that's more about stabilizing, hey, this guy isn't done. You know, you knew when you signed that contract that the back end of that wouldn't be the friendliest. If he is a league average hitter, given what he does in defensively and base running and as a clubhouse guy, I think that's what you're looking for right now. You're not looking to trade him just yet. I don't know there'd be a huge market. No game tonight. Blair and Barker have you for 4-6. We'll be back at 10 a.m. tomorrow to set up this San Fran series. Answer more of your text to 590, 590. Thank you to Marnie Gellner, to Ryan Dempster, to Ben Clemens, and to Chris LaRue for joining us. Thanks to Andrew Adams, Amit Mann, and Jennifer Rolnick behind the glass. Hope you all have a wonderful Monday. We'll talk to you at 10 a.m. tomorrow.